So, Superior Man, what was your first thought?
My first thought, like when I first started the book, I was thinking that it was a little primitive sounding. Okay, like almost kind of out of touch. It kind of came across as, wow, I can never share this book with any female friend of mine because it sounds very chauvinistic initially. Then the more I got into it, I was like, this book is pretty amazing because, I mean, it made me think about how shitty of a man I was, like how weak it made me feel in certain aspects, because it made me realize that I had so much room for improvement emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me feel like much of what I thought was outside of my control with respect to women were due to, I would say, negligence in some sense. I'd say negligence in some sense.
But not necessarily malicious negligence, right?
Yes.
Ignorant negligence.
Yes, definitely ignorance. Yes.
I mean, who's supposed to teach us this stuff?
Listen, this book has been around, 20 mm-hmm. years? And the first time I heard of it was this year.
Well,
never even heard the name.
I mean, my guess is 90% of the people who read the title are turned off. And then 90% of the people who aren't turned off by the title but make it into the book, whether they're listening or reading, stop after about a chapter or two because they're like, is this a joke? I mean, is this guy trying to win an award for chauvinism or for womanizing?
Comedy. Yeah, comedy almost.
I almost thought it was shtick at first. I thought it was a put-on. I thought this is some kind of parody, right? Like, I thought it was like an Uncle Drew commercial. But just like you, I, you know, here's the deal. I listen to these books. I don't read them. It takes no effort. I passively listen. They're in my ears. I have no choice but to hear it. So oftentimes I make it past the point where I normally would stop paying attention. You know, close the book. And thank God for that, because that's the only thing that saved this book for me. And then not only did it save it, it is absolutely life-changing. It's so eye-opening. It's so duh. You know what I mean? You read it and you go, well, no shit. And yet I didn't think of it. Or every time I did think of it, I felt shamed.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it kind of, that's what it came down to for me, I think, was everything you feel is what you're supposed to feel. There's no mistake here. Like, if you see a woman and you want to have sex with her, that's not your fault that you want to have sex with her.
Yeah.
Now, what you do with that is largely
based. It makes all the difference in the world.
But the thought itself, stop apologizing for the thought. Stop feeling guilty for the thought. No one asked for thoughts to be put in their head.
Yeah.
So that could.
Yeah, I thought it really leveled the playing ground, right? And so, you know, men as a group or as a species, we are, you know, definitely more physically imposing than our counterparts, but it leveled the playing field across men, right? Because you got guys my size and then guys your size, right? I'm 6 feet, you know, 170 wet, and I can't even imagine what size you actually are. And so it leveled the playing field in this sense. And it's like, it's not even about physical dominance. This is about purely like emotional management.
Well, this is about being the best man you can be. And
Yes.
There's no ranking here. There's no, you know, yep. It's like you're either the best you can be or you're not. It doesn't matter compared to anybody else.
Yes,
exactly. Because there are too many aspects here. Like it's not the physical part. It's not the emotional part. It's the holistic part. But I think the one thing that kept coming up over and over again was women want strong men. I mean, that was,
yeah,
that's the part that will keep, you know, a lot of guys in their 20s say, and 30s probably listening is, okay, this isn't, I'm not going to be a better man just to be a better man. Like, well, I don't get an award for that. Where's my trophy? Right. But yeah. I would love to be a better man if that increased my chances of, fuck, I don't put that broad over there.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. Do guys say broad anymore?
I think that depends on where they're from. But
so if I was in New Jersey,
I don't really hear it too often. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. You said 40 years ago.
Well, when you say when, you can't leave out, or when you say where, you can't leave out when, because there is no separation. That's another podcast.
Where and when with respect to what exactly?
In other words, space and time aren't two separate entities, right? It's space time. They're inextricable. They're mashed potatoes.
So you've switched over to physics.
I did.
You did.
Well, yeah. It's not so much switching over. Fine. It's just pointing out the obvious connection that physics has to everything.
Which is what?
Well, in that case, that's what it was. But space, the world is made of physics. Well, I'll take the next step for the world is made of math. Physics is made of math. And then it branches out from there. So the world begot math, and math begot physics, and physics begot, and so on and so on and so on.
It is an interesting podcast for another day. Didn't you teach physics?
I did for about a year and a half.
Science?
Yeah, physics.
Specifically physics? Okay.
Physics and a separate class that was just astronomy. Which I was overqualified for, by the way, because I looked up once when I was like 7.
Which means you like burned your retina or something?
No, it just means that I've done more than most astronomy teachers in terms of preparing for.
Oh,
there's no light.
I thought you were talking about when you look in the sun, and which is what they tell you not to do when you're
right. Well,
I thought you said you did it, and I was like, well, how can you still see?
Yeah,
but. Well,
they can. You can do it. See, these are things that
you can do it for long.
These are things that strong men can do, Jay. Yes, you got to get.
I need to get deeper in the book.
You need to read the book again. And I'll tell you what, while you're reading it, have on a set of headphones and listen to it. If you have a special friend, a good friend, get them to act it out, practice. This is the critical part. You've got to stare at the sun. Mm. Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah.
No, but seriously, I mean, okay, back to what the actual point was. This definition of a strong man, and not that they ever define it, right? But they paint a picture over the course of several chapters that gets everyone to understand what a man looks like, what a man doesn't look like, and what they do look like. And to me, that's the value in this book. You can always compare yourself against that imagery or that visualization that you have, right? You've got some picture of what a man is now. Yours looks different than mine, I'm sure. But at any time, you could have your WWJD bracelet on, but on your other wrist, you got to have WWSMD. What would Superior Man do?
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, in terms of advocating for or being a proponent of, I'm a big fan of this book. I think it should be rewritten so as to make it more acceptable and accessible.
Or inclusive,
It's such a barrier to get to the meat of that, to get to the information, which is invaluable.
Exactly. So, like, I started listening to it again. And the first, I think it's just, you know, I don't think I made it out of the first chapter on the my second listen, but it seemed at times he sounds exclusively focused on heterosexual relationships. Yep. But at times he does mention like this could be for anybody regardless of what type of relationship it is. So it's like it makes it difficult in some respects to recommend the book to all people to read because, you know, some people naturally going to be off put by his,
but you know how he saves himself?
Noun usage.
Here's what he does. He redefines masculine and feminine, right? Instead of saying that men are masculine and women are feminine, he says there are masculine qualities and there are feminine qualities. And so whenever you're listening to this, anything that you hear that has to do with sex is really of your own making. I realized that I did that to myself many times.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, every time I did it, I'd go, dude, he can't talk. I mean, I know the book's 20 years old, right? But he can't talk like that. And then I'd go, wait a minute. All he said was masculine or feminine, and that's not necessarily to be assigned to either gender.
Which he reduces to basically energy, right?
Right.
Throughout the book, basically just waters down all of those gender qualities down to energy.
Yes. Energy as in where does your energy tend to go? Like in what direction? Where does it feel that it's most harmonic?
Yeah. So I pulled a quote that, or not a quote, but a section out that really was kind of, maybe slapped me in the face a little bit. But he says, it's kind of funny the way it starts out, but I didn't like pick this section out for any particular reason other than it just keeps the context of the quote. But he says, you've probably seen the face of your woman when you've gotten to the point of putting up with her rather than permeating her. She begins to look haggard and drawn. Her long face bespeaks a heart and body unravished by the clarity and force of your masculine loving. She never seems really happy. Eventually, her resentment turns inward and disease symptoms begin to appear in her body. Her skin seems to wither before your eyes. You dislike her smell. As her frustration and negativity build, you become less attracted, which, of course, deprives her of even normal human affection. When things get really bad, she seems so ugly and dark that you are repulsed, and your complete withdrawal leaves her barren at her core. You may stay together because you love each other, but both of you are totally depolarized, more disgusted than turned on by each other. During these times, you probably also begin to feel the same disregard toward the world. Over time, you may begin to lose interest in your projects and career. You may consider changing jobs or finding another woman. It seems that newness in and of itself will be more attractive and exciting than your worn-out woman or your droning career. And you are right. A new woman and new work will excite you and cheer you up. And this is exactly what a mediocre man does. He stays with the woman and a project for as long as they interest him and turn him on. And when the excitement seems to wear off, he moves on to another and then another hopeful source of polarity and excitement. Yeah.
I can't relate to that at all.
That was, you know, I can relate to certain parts of it, and yeah. I got friends too.
I have a friend. I have a friend who that applies exactly to. Like, this friend of mine, you might as well have just said his entire life
story. Said his name. Yeah, man. It's, I mean, I think the fact that he kind of broke down the steps that lead to People just growing distant and growing apart from each other. And
well, and the decision that has to be made, the wishy-washiness of the mediocre man, right? Like,
yes.
A great man. What is it? What are we? Modern man. What's this book called? Superior. The superior man.
Yeah.
The superior man doesn't splash around in both worlds, right? The superior man.
Yeah.
Instead, now this is why there's not very many superior men, because we're not trying to make a big splash. You know what I mean? Like, being a superior man, I mean, this is, of course, some guy's opinion and has unbelievably good points, you know, but that one's got to be a tough one for a lot of guys, especially a lot of guys that have, you know, been married a long time. Yeah.
Well, it's shiny things excite all types of people
for good reason,
right? And you know, for good reasons, like the new device, the new computer, the new car, the new clothes, the new people. I mean, it's just, and so particularly it's well known to affect men with respect to having wandering eyes. And but I think when he said that, it was basically like a weakness to just want to ditch old things for new things.
I wonder at what point that changes, you know? Because at some point you're really the weaker man if you continue to stay
mediocre man.
Yeah. That's what I mean. If you're being oppressed for a decade, right, by a woman that's impenetrable. Like you use all of the tactics and the concepts that are written in this book, and to no avail. You know, I mean, maybe you execute them perfectly. I'm of course speaking hypothetically, because no one could actually embody perfection. Okay, but just imagine, if you will, that there's a guy. A man who is in this situation, who this applies to, has spent the last 5, 10, 15, 25, 30 years using the methods exactly as prescribed in this book, without a shred of evidence that there's any effectiveness. Like, at what point are you just a chump?
Yeah.
Right. And then some might say, well, okay, then end it. End it and move on. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, really? Well, what about this? What about that? Did you consider this? Did you consider that? Right?
At one point in the book he was saying that you know, and I guess we're still on the vein of talking about interpersonal relationships.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole thing is a metaphor for how you relate to the world, right? That's the key, I guess. Supposed to be the key, although I think this reads much more as a how to relate to women manual.
Yes, much of it. Much of it.